Welcome to a Juno Afternoon for this Wednesday. I'm Andy Klein, your host for this hour, back in the studio after about a year and a half, and it's really fun to be back. Today, we're going to be hearing how the City and Borough of Juneau and the Chamber of Commerce are teaming up to promote vaccinations, why they think it's a good for the health of the community and the economy, a day set aside to celebrate Juneau's rich maritime history and culture, and what makes it a special occasion. For garden lovers, the Solstice Party, you won't want to miss, and for you book lovers, the Juneau Public Library is ready and waiting to be embraced. So go check out the library. We'll be talking to them. Today's forecast, the rest of the day, is going to be some widespread rain showers. And tonight, partly cloudy, lows in the mid-40s and light winds. And you're listening to a Juneau Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein. So happy that you're all joining me today. You know, when you get a vaccination, it's kind of like a two-for-one deal. You not only get protection from COVID, but the Juneau Chamber of Commerce says the economy also gets a boost. And to talk about that and that perspective on vaccinations today is Eric Forrest from the Juneau Chamber of Commerce and also the Red Dog Saloon, and Robert Barr, the planning chief for the Emergency Operations Center for the City and Borough of Juneau. And welcome to both of you gentlemen joining us on Zoom. How are you guys doing today?
Good, Andy. How are you?
Great. And Robert, how are you?
Doing well, Andy. Thanks for having us
today. Great. Eric, I'll throw it to you first. This idea about vaccinations not only being something that benefits people's health, but also benefits our local economy. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, you know, this kind of grew out pretty quickly. We got a notice from the Alaska Chamber of Commerce that they received a grant from the federal government to distribute out to chambers to help encourage vaccinations. And so they split their money up into piles for each individual chamber around the state. And the Juneau Chamber was awarded $45,000 if we applied for the grant. And we, of course, said, well, absolutely, we'll apply for the grant. So we got them, and then we figured out, well, what are we going to do with it? You know, we came up with all different kinds of ideas, brainstormed some different stuff. But in the end, we decided, you know, the best thing we could do was to make this money work twice and make it work to educate and help direct people to get their vaccinations, that last final group that we need to get over the 70% that Robert's so interested in. And we also wanted to help out our member businesses that have had a really tough year in a lot of ways. And so we decided if we took that money and invested it into 20 different businesses and bought gift cards, we would then donate those gift cards to the city, and they could give those out as incentive for people to come get their first or single shot vaccine during the month of June.
All right. So giving a little bit of a fun incentive to people as well.
Exactly. They get that. And then in addition to the gift card, which everybody can get, everybody's entered into a drawing for, I think, five $1,000 prizes at the end of the month. So you could also win some cash.
That's awesome. Robert, talk to me. Eric mentioned that 70% figure. Talk to me a little bit about how far we are towards that and also why that's such an important figure for you.
Yeah, thanks, Andy. So, you know, we're close to that number. As of today, 65.7% of the total population of Juneau has gotten a first dose. 61.7% has gotten their full series complete, or they've gotten a single dose of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. So that's great. The 70% number, you know, it's honestly a little bit arbitrary. What we're trying to approximate with that is herd immunity. And we know that herd immunity is not an exact science. It varies from population to population. It varies based on all kinds of different factors, the severity of the disease, the presence of variants in any given community, but it's a decent approximation. It's a good goal, we thought, earlier in this pandemic to set for our community, in recognizing that if we could get to that rate, that 70% vaccination rate, that we were all just a little bit safer and more protected from COVID, both individually and collectively.
Is there a number there as far as an actual number of people? Does that mean 5,000 people we're trying to reach? Are we trying to, what's, do you have a number in mind?
You know, based on where we're at right now, we need around 1,300 more people to get vaccinated,
to
get
to 70%. Not that many. It doesn't really, we're very close.
We're getting there. Our vaccination rate, it's slowly ticking up every day. We're definitely not vaccinating as quickly as we did earlier in the pandemic, but I'm heartened to see those numbers increase every day.
Eric, what are you seeing from people, or what are you hearing from people as far as their enthusiasm and this new angle on trying to approach it from an economic standpoint?
You know, it's twofold. I've heard a lot of thank yous from the businesses that we took that money and invested in, because obviously the business gets the money right away from buying the gift card, right? So that goes directly to the business. But I've also heard from, you know, anecdotally from some people around town, both my employees and some others that I've interacted with, that they were encouraged to go get their first shot. You know, maybe they were just waiting for the crowds to lessen up, or maybe they've just been really busy, or maybe they haven't had time. But this was another incentive for them to, like, you know what, I'm going to go get that vaccine. I'm going to get that gift card. I'm going to, you know, be safe and help my community. So, you know, I think especially with the younger people, we tried to target some businesses in the chamber that had been particularly hard hit by the pandemic, but also businesses that would appeal to those in that group that have yet to be vaccinated, something that they could, you know, use, whether it's a Bullwinkle's Pizza one, or whether it's a Heritage Coffee one, or a movie theater one, you know, a gift card that they would be able to choose from. So they have like two or three choices. They don't have to take whatever we give them. They have several choices at each event to choose from. And I've had several of my people that I know that have said, yeah, I got a Bullwinkle's gift card. It's great. You know, so it was definitely helpful.
Sounds good. Robert, early on in the pandemic, when then early on in the sequence of the public being able to get vaccinated, one of the big things that was talked about as far as the public health risk was overwhelming health facilities. What's the public health overall public health risk now for people that are choosing to not get vaccinated?
You know, that's a really great question. I was on a call earlier this week with some of the Department of Health and Social Services professionals that we consult with regularly. And one of the statistics that was shared that really stood out for me is that when you look back at all of the COVID hospitalizations that we've had throughout the state for the whole year, right, from January 1st until now, 97% of those were among individuals. 97% of those hospitalizations were folks who were unvaccinated. So I think, you know, that just really goes to show you that these vaccines are truly genuinely effective. They keep people out of the hospital. They keep they address that question that you asked, Andy. They help prevent our public health capacity or hospital capacity from getting overwhelmed.
And just to spell it out plainly for folks, the vaccine isn't an absolute guarantee that you may not contract COVID. And we're hearing that in the news, athletes and things like, you know, we sort of see, oh, so-and-so tested positive for COVID. But what we're hearing from health officials now is that the important thing is that you will be very highly unlikely to get seriously ill, even if you were to contract COVID if you're immunized.
That's right. That's an important point. The effectiveness of the vaccines can be thought of as sort of a spectrum, right? They are very good at preventing death and hospitalization, and they become less good, if you imagine that spectrum, at preventing less serious impacts of the disease. And nevertheless, they are still quite good at preventing you from getting COVID at all. But yes, vaccine breakthrough cases, that's what we call it when someone tests positive for COVID after being vaccinated, do happen. It is possible. But if you do have one of those, if you have a vaccine breakthrough case, you are much less likely to have a severe outcome if you've previously been vaccinated.
It seems like as far as mask wearing goes right now, there's really been a corner turned. Just speaking locally, I haven't really been anywhere else. So just, walking around in Juneau, going to stores, that sort of thing, people are choosing to not wear a mask. What's the CBJ policy on that? While we have you on the line here, Robert, just to get it straight from you, what's the CBJ policy on that? And what's sort of the advice that CBJ health professionals are giving as far as mask wearing?
Yeah, that's a good one. So our COVID mitigation strategies mirror CDC guidance on that topic right now, which is that if you are not vaccinated, or if you are vaccinated, we'll start there, then you can choose not to wear a mask in indoor environments. And the reason why the CDC has come out with that guidance is because of numerous studies that have really driven down and demonstrated the effectiveness of these vaccines, both at preventing you individually from getting sick, and at preventing you if you are exposed from exposing others to the disease. So that's the guidance if you are fully vaccinated. If you're not fully vaccinated, you are still required under our mitigation strategies to wear a mask when you're in an indoor public setting. Or if you're in an outdoor crowded event. So think about the 4th of July parade coming up. If you're not yet fully vaccinated, you are required to be masked at that event. That does mean that we'll see a lot of kids in masks, right? Because kids under the age of 12 are not yet eligible for vaccination. And that is also, I think, a great reason or a great incentive for people who aren't yet fully vaccinated yet, right? So 2 weeks after your final dose, to wear a mask as well to keep our kids safe and get them ready for school when it reopens in the fall.
Eric, I think one of the big reasons why there's a push right now, especially among businesses, is the news that, in fact, we will have at least a partial cruise tourism season this year. Is that part of what really is motivating you to make sure that we're ready and prepared when cruise ships start arriving?
I could take that one. And Eric, I bet you might have some comments on cruise ships.
I will, but you go first.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think the thing to realize about, we are intending, or we are hearing that we'll see some cruise ships late this summer. I think the first large ship is scheduled to come in a little bit over a month from now, towards the end of July.
Which ship is that? I just hadn't heard that news.
You know, it's one of the Royal Caribbean of the Seas ones. I think it's Ovation of the Seas. Is it Ovation? Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, one of the things that I think is important for everyone to know about that is all of these cruise ships that will be coming into town this summer will be coming in with vaccination rates that'll be higher than what our vaccination rates will be locally, right? 95% is the standard that the CDC has set. And I'm relatively confident that they will all meet that goal. If we want to see cruise ship tourists and passengers, you know, disembarking and engaging in our local economy and tours and shops and what have you, it is important that we too sort of try to meet that goal and be on equal footing.
Well, that's interesting. What I hadn't really thought about it, but what's happening with these cruise ship passengers that are coming off that's a group of people that are highly aware of vaccination and vaccination rates, right? And that they put that foot forward in order to get on the ship. So I would think that you would want to make sure that your community is known for also being highly aware of vaccinations and the benefits of them.
Yeah, I think that's really important. You know, I think Robert made a really good point that, you know, we're excited for these ships. You know, as president of the chamber, I can tell you we're very excited that there's some ships coming into town. It's by no means, a panacea to the problems that the business community has faced, but it will go a long way to making it, making these businesses able to make it to next season. They have to go through a whole nother winter of the little or no business. So I think that this 8 weeks that we are going to see one cruise ship a day, maybe two on a certain day, but certainly not every single day, will go a long way. And the chamber is really excited about the fact that, you know, Robert said that, you know, the cruise lines, that group of people is going to be coming in at a vaccination rate of 95%, which is going to be well above where we're at. And so I think that's an important thing to get out there. The other thing that, you know, the chamber's helping and with the city's help is that we've got some signage out there that you can, anybody can get from the chamber. You can get it from junochamber.com. And it's a very nice, easy to read sign that the city came up with. It basically just says, if you're fully vaccinated, masks are optional. If you're unvaccinated, masks are required. And I've seen that sign on lots of businesses around town. And I think that goes a long way to making it clear to everybody, visitors and locals alike, where we're at in terms of masks and when you walk into a business.
Yeah, I've seen those masks as well. Eric, one more time, just let us know what's this kind of fun program that's being put together with the Juneau Chamber of Commerce in cooperation with the CBJ?
It's a great program. We're able to do it thanks to the Alaska Chamber. We received a grant. We turned that grant into business for local businesses. We used it all on local Juneau businesses. And you can go through the end of June at any of the city-sponsored clinics, and they're all over town. I know there's one coming up at the movie theater. There's one at the downtown movie theater, one at the Valley movie theater. They're moving them all around town to make it easy for people to get to. You go in there, you get your first or your single shot vaccine, and you will be able to choose from your choice of several different gift cards from local merchants. You can take that gift card and go spend it at a local business and help that local business out. So it just goes all the way around. All that $45,000 that will be received, 100% of it is being reinvested back into the local economy, which I think is going a long way. And the Chamber is very happy to partner with the city on it. The city's done an outstanding job, and we're just happy to be there to help them get the word out and get the vaccination rate up around that 70% number.
Very cool. And of course, five lucky people will get into a drawing, right? Well, everyone gets into a drawing, and five lucky are chosen. Yep. For $1,000 bucks, clams, cash.
$1,000 cash at the end of the month. Robert's going to, I don't know, he has some computer magic generating thing that will generate random numbers, and those will correlate with a person, and that person will be notified that they won $1,000. They don't have to do anything. All they got to do is go in and get a very simple shot. And one quick thing I wanted to say also is that, you know, I've talked to a lot of people that, why haven't got your shot? Well, I'm worried about side effects, you know, and the side effect issue, I think, is really over-exaggerated by the media. And, you know, the vast, vast majority of people who get an injection have little or no side effect whatsoever. A sore arm maybe for 24 hours, just like if you were getting a regular vaccine any other time of your life.
Yeah, so to really me, it was just like worse. It was just like a flu shot or just like any other vaccine. And I got a shingles vaccine, which was much worse, actually.
yeah, that's one, yeah. But yeah, I agree. And I think it's important to put that out there for people to understand that, you know, the vast, vast majority have had no reaction or just a sore arm. And so there's no big deal. You go in, you get your quick shot, you get a gift card, and go have a nice dinner with a friend or family member.
Well, Eric Forrest from Juneau Chamber of Commerce and Red Dog Saloon, and Robert Barr, Planning Chief for the Emergency Operations Center at the City and Borough. You know, thanks so much to both of you for talking to us a little bit about this really awesome program that CBJ and the Chamber of Commerce are putting together. It's a $20 gift card for anyone that goes in and gets a vaccine between now and the end of June, and you also get into a drawing for $1,000 in cash. Thanks to both of you for coming in and explaining the program to us.
Thanks for having us, Andy.
All right, no problem. Yep,
thank you, Andy.
Okay, thanks, Robert. Sailing, celebrating sailing. Well, whether you're out on a boat or looking out across the Gaslander Channel, water is a part of everyday life here in Juneau. We all know that. And yet, the relationship between the community and the sea is almost kind of just taken for granted. But on one day of the year, it's celebrated, and that is the Juneau Maritime Festival, which is going to be happening this Saturday. And joining us now is Brian Holst, the CEO of the Juneau Economic Development Council that throws the Maritime Fest every year. Brian, thanks so much for joining us.
It's great to be here, Andy. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would just right up front, we should just say, I know about the Maritime Fest because you wrote me in to be an MC at the happening. So I'm really excited that we're doing it again, that we get to have the Maritime Fest, and hopefully the weather will hold for us. Just scattered rain showers, kind of in the forecast for now. But that scattered means mostly sunny, right?
It is always sunny on the Maritime Festival day.
That's a lie, but no, let's keep going. Well, let's talk about it. So there's actually, it's kind of a hard one to talk about. There's so many different things happening, but you know, I think one thing everyone knows about is the tug of war. That's of course an amazing event that happens, but tell me just first and foremost a little bit about how long it's been going on, why the Maritime Fest was decided to start happening, that sort of thing.
Great. Thanks for that. And it's a community event, really. You give us credit. I think maybe we get the blame for coming up with the idea. But we recognize that this community, maritime is a huge part of Juneau. That's obvious to everyone. But we didn't have a way to celebrate that. So 12 years ago, we put together the first Maritime Festival. Last year, of course, we didn't have one. So now instead of the annual, we're calling it the 11th edition. But it's an opportunity to celebrate Juneau's maritime commerce, culture, and history. And it's all rich. And, you know, just to put in perspective, one of our largest single employers is the fishing industry, if those were individual jobs. We have about 700 people that make their livelihood from fishing. And if we look at the jobs that are directly related to the ocean, we have just as many of those in ocean industry as we do in state government. When we look at Coast Guard and NOAA and fishing and fish processing, it's a big number. So that's what we really want to bring people's attention to, is how critical to who we are as a community is the Maritime Festival.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, Brian, because I think, you know, like, for instance, when you go to Sitka, man, the harbor is just right there, right? The fact that fishing is a major part of it is just completely unavoidable. In Juneau, you know, we have separate harbors out in different areas. The boat, different types of boats are located in different areas. And so I think you're right. We can get a little distant from the vitality of the maritime industry to Juneau.
It's a big part of who we are, and it really helps our community to be well-diversified economically. From my point of view at the Economic Development Council, we like the fact that we have mining and fishing, you know, industries that are operated independently of each other, keeps us more stable economically.
Yeah, I mean, people think of Juneau as a company town and the company is the state, right? You know, and of course, mm-hmm. that is incredibly significant, but you're right. It's more and more diverse. Of course, we've become more and more localized on tourism in the past 10 to 15 years. Has the fishing industry in Juneau, talk to me about how that's changed a little bit. Has that changed, or the maritime industry, has that kind of been changing?
Well, it's had a couple tough years, right? And last year was really bad. So much of our seafood is fresh, going to restaurants, you know, high-end product. And that really shut down, of course, in the pandemic. And that's coming back. In fact, the problem with our processors now, the challenge is getting enough workers to sort of meet the demand this year. So things are looking up. Overall, it's been a steady part of our economy. Fishing in general, you know, its heyday in Juneau might have been, you know, 7 or 8 years ago, much bigger volumes, but it's a really important part of our community. And, you know, we open the festival with a nod to history and culture. We open it with a traditional landing of Tlingit canoes. And it's a wonderful part. The festival starts at 11 a.m. If you're interested in that, it's really fun to see the canoes paddled to our shore, and there's some recognition of arrival recognition and a greeting, and then an acceptance and a permission to land. A fun dimension, an important dimension of who we are also as a community, our native of history. We celebrate that at the beginning of the festival, and that's how we start each year. We've been doing that for many years. The One People Canoe Society, East Coo Dancers also help us to do that. And then we have 6 hours of fun on the waterfront.
I agree that opening ceremony is really moving, educational. It's a really great experience to be there for that. It's something that's really memorable to me about the past maritime festivals. But so let's talk about some of the other stuff going on. We got some music happening through the day. What else is happening?
Yeah, we're going to have a stage all day long. We have great volunteer performers. You know, it is a community event. One thing that we haven't done is we don't pay our performers. So you go enjoy it. There's a tip box there for your favorite performers, but we have bands going all day from the jam activities, Juneau Alaska Music Matters, young kids to, names that people are a little more familiar. Well, that the adult crowd might be a little more familiar with, I should say, Jocelyn Miles, Radio Flyers, Box Borealis, Arias Hoyle is going to give us some rap as well. So it's a lot of fun all afternoon with bands.
We have I'm looking forward to Arias. I love Arias. I love Arias Hoyle, man. He's great.
And we have a group doing sea shanties this year as well, which will be a lot of fun.
Well, that's so. That's perfect. That's right on the nose. Perfect fit.
And at noon, if you don't get there at 11, which you should, but at noon, the Coast Guard does a demonstration of a rescue over the channel.
It's so impressive. It's just the wildest. Number one, that helicopter has a different sound, as we all know. You always know when that helicopter's flying over, right? It's a different sound than any other thing in the air. And right. they really do it. They jump out of there and get in the water. It's wild.
And we've asked for this, and I just to share with people, I at first felt like, can we really ask for this? And then they point out to me, they're required to do training. So what we'll actually see is one of their trainings that occurs, but they're kind enough to do that right in front of us. So it gets them in their hours to do the training. They send them over from Sitka to do that for us, and then they head back out. So that happens promptly. at noon. So you'll want to see that as well. And the whole festival this year is happening at the new deck over. And so if you don't know what that is.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. It's a brand new spot. Yep.
Yep. And so Docks and Harbors and the city of Juneau with Docks and Harbors covered over the area. There used to be ocean you could see from the dock between where the library is and the rest of South Franklin. Now that is completely covered over in decking. So it opens up a lot more of our waterfront, and we're really happy that one of the goals of that deck over is to have more community space on the waterfront. So we're going to be the first big event to do anything in that space, and it's a huge, beautiful open space. People are really going to enjoy that. So we'll get to debut that on Saturday.
That deck over space, then, right now, I think it kind of got delayed a year, right? That, you know, as far as like what was going to get developed, what's the plan for what's going to get developed in that area? Is there a plan yet on that?
Yeah. So there's a property on land, right? Which is owned by Morse Communications or some derivative of that company. And that they have, so there's going to be development there that's geared towards restaurants. Those are the initial plans. I think that their plans are a little bit on hold, affected by the pandemic.
And then there's kind of a bus turnaround kind of area, right?
Right.
Yeah.
All right. There's a bus turnaround. There's a deck over that belongs to that's owned by the city and borough of Juneau and administered by Docks and Harbors. That's all ours. That property there, that's for community use. Their plans there to eventually, once they want to develop something, as I understand it, in coordination with the upland part. So we'll see eventually. Right now it's just flat and open. Eventually there's going to be benches and other maybe even a small stage at some point is going to be put in there for future community use.
Well, let's talk about a couple of the kind of fun events. The tug of war, of course, everyone knows. How do those teams form?
Yeah, so you need a team of six, and we encourage you to sign up in advance. The trophy is epic. It's huge. You get your name engraved if you win. You get your name engraved on the trophy. The chances of winning are slim because the Coast Guard, it's good between Coast Guards and Docks and Harbors, but I'd love to see some other group other than them, you know, at least compete for it. And it's six people. It's got to be mixed gender. So no more than four of any one gender, and then you put your team together and compete. Lots of fun, but if you do win, you get a cool trophy. You get it only for a year, and you have to bring it back next year and do a let out again.
Well, that sounds all right. It sounds fair. And then what's this new one, the tote bailing contest that I'm hearing about? What's that going on there?
So we've always had races in totes. Right, which is fun, down to the water. But because we're doing it up high, up on the deck over, we're going to have this. You bail out a tote, and from one tote to another tote, you're going to get wet. And you're going to have fun, and whoever does the most successfully in the right amount of time can win. So you have a small team, two to work the bailing contest. We have cool prizes donated by businesses around Juneau that you're going to be able to get. We also have the fillet contest. And this is really for folks that this is a very serious contest. People that can fillet accurately and quickly and beautifully and not
it's an art. It's an art to see someone beautifully fillet a fish. It's incredible.
And I am always wowed by the town. That's really a fun way to really just focus on these folks that have this talent. And you don't have to be a professional fillet-er, but don't come out and learn it.
That's a bad idea. Yeah, you don't want to be in front of a crowd the first time you try filleting a salmon. All right. Well, it all sounds awesome. Just one more time, it's happening Saturday. Starts at 11. Is that right?
Starts at 11 to 5 p.m. There's harbor cruises as well. You want to miss that? And buy a raffle ticket. You buy a raffle ticket, and you win two round trip ticket on Alaska Airlines, and you support the Maritime Festival.
Well, Brian, thanks so much. That's Brian Hull, CEO of the Juneau Economic Development Council. It's the Juneau Maritime Festival. It's the 11th annual. I think we can still call it the... No, everyone had to skip a year last year. Come on. We're not going to call it 11th annual. It's 11th annual. And it's all starting this Saturday at that new Deckover area right south of the library on at the docks there, and celebrates the entire maritime industry here in Juneau. Brian, thanks so much for joining us.
Grow anything in the garden of your mind. In the garden of your mind. You can grow
gardens. With flowers in bloom right now, it's prime time to visit the Jensen Olsen Arboretum. But these days, there's what you might call a new attraction to show off, new amenities, shall we say. And here to tell us about that and all the activities happening at Jensen Olsen Arboretum is Pat White. Pat, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I was just listening to the fellow before you, and boy, it's so great to have activities again.
I know. It's so fun.
I'm so glad. I'm just so happy.
Yeah, anyway. Me too. Well, it's great to have you here. And so let's talk about, the Arboretum has been a wonderful respite and a wonderful oasis for people even during these times, a wonderful outdoor place to go enjoy nature and all of its beauty. Tell us a little bit about what we've been talking about here, this new facility. Let's just get that out of the way and talk about it. It's a pretty fun thing and I think a significant investment for you guys.
Yes, thank you. Well, we have a new, lovely new loo, and it's a bathroom, an upgrade to the bathroom, and it's We had a ribbon cutting in early April. Beth Weldon came out, the mayor, to cut the ribbon, and we had a little celebration. And it's fully operational, and it's being used every day. And it's a great upgrade from the plastic outhouse we had for many years. And so we have one of the things I wanted to talk about today was we have a call for artists, or call to artists, to come and make the loo lovely on the inside. It's pretty industrial now, and we'd like it to look a little better. So we're calling for artists to come and look at it. We have an online thing, and I'll give you the web address in just a minute. But come and design something. And we have an application online. Give us some ideas. There'll be a kind of a panel of people to pick the final selection. And there's $2,000 as an award. And the application is due July 15th. So that artists can come on out, or it's all online. You can see what the dimensions and all that stuff online.
Well, that's a great idea. Yeah, to have some to just expand the beauty throughout the entire facility. Yeah, that's great.
Mm-hmm. I was talking with an artist this morning. I was out there, and she showed me her work. And so it's all whales and all this, breaching whales, and that sounds great. So hopefully she'll put an application in.
Yeah, that's right. But you could go so many different directions, obviously, with the flowers, whales, the beautiful scenery, beautiful wildlife, the whole thing, and even the history of the Jensen Olsen Arboretum. Touch on that a little bit. Last time I was there, I read the really great informational plaques that are there, and was just so it was just so interesting to hear a little bit of the history of how that garden started, how it kind of changed hands through the years, through the same family, but kind of weaved its way around in the family. Tell me a little bit about the history of it. Yeah,
sure. The garden itself is an old homestead from the Peterson Jensen Olsen family as they married and changed their names and things. And it's at Pearl Harbor, which is just this side of the Peterson Lake trailhead. Peterson Lake, all around in there, used to have a lot of mining. And this family mined, and they also supplied food in their big vegetable garden for other miners. Now, the vegetable garden has been continuously worked for almost 100 years, and it's still producing, and we've got stuff in there today. The Carolyn Jensen, who was the last family member to live there, wanted to continue it as a public garden. And her trust worked with the Seal Trust, which is a way in which you can convey land to be a conservation easement, excuse me. And the City and Borough Seal Trust and the Jensen Trust created the Arboretum about 15 years ago. And Merrill Jensen, no relation, was the first manager, and he brought the thing from, almost wasn't an abandoned place, but it was, she was an elderly woman when she left the place. So he brought it up to snuff.
And it's been such a beautiful addition and beautiful park and area to wander around. And you mentioned that it's been a producing vegetable garden. Did they have techniques to keep the soil fertile, or was the soil just naturally fertile always? Or,
well, as organic gardeners, you're replenishing with whatever is available, manures and different soil amendments, not chemicals, but minerals and seaweed. Seaweed's a great thing.
Sure.
And it's right there. It's right there. So there's a wonderful patch of rhubarb, and the vegetable garden also has beautiful peonies. So if you like peonies, they're big, blooming about 3 weeks. But so it's been around a long time. It's a beautiful place. We have a new manager who came in January. Meryl Jensen retired last year, and her name is Ginger Hudson, and she's from Anchorage. She worked at Anchorage Botanical Gardens. And has come down, is doing a great job.
Great.
Given it's the coldest winter, and you know, the second coldest winter, the second snowiest winter, the rainiest May, you know. I mean,
but an important day in the life of every gardener, I would think, is solstice. And you're going to be celebrating solstice out there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. This is a new thing for us. The Friends of the Jensen Olsen Arboretum is a nonprofit group that helps fund things for the garden. And we decided we'd have a little event this year for the first time. So we're having a solstice party June 20th, this coming Sunday, from 5 to 7. And it's ticketed, so you need to go online and get a ticket. There's only 50 available, and we're at about 45. So,
okay.
I want to encourage people to come out. And Tom Loker's going to play. We'll have event tents just in case it's rainy. You need to bring your own chair because we don't have chairs enough. And you need to bring your own mosquito repellent because I was out there today and there's quite a few mosquitoes. So hopefully that won't deter people, but we'll have a great time. We have a tapas box supper and soft drinks. So 5 to 7 this Sunday at the Arboretum. And if you have it online, what our our website
we
is?
We do. We have it linked on our webpage. Obviously, if people just search for Jensen Olsen Arboretum on Google, they will find that site.
Yeah, they'll get
well.
It, right.
It's friends of joarboretum.org is the website.
Correct.
And
right.
So that sounds like a great time. Although it sounds like, boy, people better act quick because there's only only a few tickets left.
Yeah.
So that's great.
We're very excited about it. And we'll see what happens. We'll see if this is an annual event like the Maritime Festival, the 11th annual.
That's
this is our first annual. This is our first annual. We'll see what happens.
Well, if it's a sellout event, you got to keep doing it. I mean, that's the way it goes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I just want to make a point here that last year, even with COVID, we had 10,000 visitors to the garden. And it became a very important thing for people to, it was the only public, parks and rec facility that was really open, you know. So people came out in droves, 10,000 people. So I'm appreciative of everybody who comes out, rain or shine, winter, fall, spring, all that. And it's a great place to just relax, bring a lunch. But if you like to ride bikes, bring your lunch out. Bring lunch, stop there for a rest. There's bears all along from the shrine down to Peterson Lake Trailhead. There's bears on the road in the ditch, and it's exciting.
Yeah.
You know, this
well,
time of year.
It's a wonderful little oasis. If you said you were just out there, peonies are blooming. Is that right? Or what else is?
The peonies are budding. They're budding.
Okay.
They'll be, yeah.
What's
the poppies?
The
blue. There's a number of kinds of blue poppies. Ed Byarski brought back some seed from Scotland, and they're blooming now. They have a very different leaf structure, and the purple, the very deep purple blue poppies are blooming, and the sky blue ones are starting to.
Nice.
Come on out to see them.
Okay. Well, Pat White, president of Friends of the Jensen Olsen Arboretum, thanks so much for joining us. It's a solstice party happening Sunday. Just a few tickets left, so go check that out online. And even if you don't get out for that, make sure to visit the Jensen Olsen Arboretum, a little gem here in Juneau. Thanks so much, Pat. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, coming up next, the latest news from Juneau Public Library, a place where adventure is waiting on a bookshelf near you. Listening to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein. Time for our monthly check-in with the Juneau Public Library. Joining us now is Andy Hirsch. He's the Outreach and Senior Services Librarian at the Juneau Public Library. Andy, great to see you again and great to talk to you again.
Thank you.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't have you live there, but now you're good. Sorry about that. It's my first technical mess up after a year and a half out. I'm doing okay.
I feel really special now, yeah. So thank you.
That's right. Well, Andy, tell us a little bit about what's happening there. We got a summer reading program coming up, things like what's happening at the library?
Yeah, it's exciting times at the library. Just a reminder that we're all three branches are open 7 days a week. We've expanded our hours, so now we're open evenings till 8 o'clock, Monday through Thursday at all three locations. We've moved back to kind of some of the hours that we had a really long time ago, which is very, very exciting for me personally, because I love that the library is open and that people can come in. But at the same time, we're also doing some really fun stuff. It is time for the summer reading program, which is always something we do every year, and it's super important. And I think it's especially important this year to get folks, kids, people of all ages, reading over the summer. And so what we have this year is a reading challenge. So if you read 10 hours, you can bring something back with you, and we give you a book. It's brand new. You get to pick it out. It's very exciting. And we have that both available online. Oh, and you get to keep the book. It's, you don't have to return it to the library all of the other libraries.
Wow. Okay.
Please return those. I know. So you can pick up the forms at the library. They're also available from our website. And in addition to that, we have kind of a different craft every week. And all of that, again, available on our website to see what the crafts are and get instructions. But also, if you stop by the library every week, there'll be a new packet or a new craft that you can pick up and then you can do and have a good time with. So it's just a really fun program, and it is going through August 7th. So it's never too late to come in and never too late to start on your summer reading.
If people are going to go visit the library, are there any new safety, health protocols, things like that you guys have in place that people should kind of know about?
Well, kind of the biggest thing that people should know about is if you are unvaccinated, then you still are required to mask in the facilities. So that's, all kids under 12 who aren't eligible, and anybody over 12 who has not been vaccinated needs to be masked. Other than that, it's mostly back to normal. We do still have some restrictions on spaces. So for instance, our meeting rooms are again available for people to book, but we've limited the number of people. So the Douglas Public Library meeting room can hold 15. The downtown one can hold 8. The Valley one is actually still being used for COVID work, so it's not available, but I hope that will be changing soon. And the small one in the Valley can hold 4 people. So kind of the only big restrictions are, we're not shoving people into a space altogether. And then, if you're unvaccinated, wear a mask. But kind of everything else is back to normal.
Was there anything you guys had to...
hours are back.
Did you guys have to worry about, cleaning the books or things like that when this was all starting? Or
it was so interesting because everything was changing really fast. And so kind of when we first closed, nobody really knew what was going on. Most scientists hadn't quite figured out exactly how transmission was happening. So we did have a period where we quarantined all of the items on their return. And so we had a quarantine period So you returned a book and then it like went into a separate room. And then a couple days later, once it could like have time for the virus to deactivate, we would check it in. But that's gone. So, you can hand stuff to us.
We've learned a lot more about how the virus actually spreads.
So you can hand stuff to us.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. And so, it's all, we're all back to normal.
Okay. Well,
pretty
that's
much,
great.
Mostly.
I see a note here about a Father's Day kit. What's happening there?
Yes. So this week's craft for the summer reading is a Father's Day or a loved one kit. So you can pick it up and you can make little coupons that say like good for 1 hour of no whining or I'm going to do the dishes. And so, that's an example of one of the weekly crafts because you have to kind of craft and make it. That we're doing with the summer reading program.
This seems like a trick, really, to play on a kid, that they have to commit to this sort of thing instead of just buying a tie. It's more valuable than a tie. It's more valuable. An hour of just quiet time, that would be amazing. Right?
Not to be a little rules lawyery, but no whining and quiet time are two different things.
Okay, that's right.
So
you can be loud but not whining. Okay, so that's I can see there.
Correct.
Kids can get around this. Okay, I get it. Okay, well that sounds great. So anything else happen that people should know about happen at the library?
We actually have a new item, which I am really excited about. We're calling them memory kits. They are, kits that are put together. They're available for checkout and they're specifically designed for people with dementia or memory loss. And the idea of the kit is there are items in there on a theme and everything works to kind of spark conversation and trigger memories between, a person experiencing memory loss and their loved one. And each of these kits, I think is really well put together. They have books primarily with like large photos in them. There's music to listen to. There's movies to watch. And then there's physical manipulative objects. And they kind of differ from kit to kit. So some have a music box in them. Some of them have puzzles. Some of them have different things to touch. And there's also scented items because scent is one of the things that really triggers memories and also allows you to kind of have conversations. And so we have designed these kits and we actually have 20 of them at the libraries. They're on all sorts of different themes. So we have one that's on Juno. We have one on celebrations. We have one on pets. And so hopefully the idea is that somebody who is struggling to connect with a loved one because of dementia or memory loss will kind of have these guided abilities to continue conversations. And I actually think it's actually super great for multi-generational use. So if you have like grandkids with their grandparents, you can read to each other and talk to each other and also, ask questions and do puzzles together and do all of these things. So
wow,
that's really
fascinating. And it also just points out how the library continues to be a resource throughout people's whole lives. There's something for everyone at the Juno Public Library. Well, Andy Hirsch, thanks so much for coming in, telling us a little bit. I'm so happy to get a monthly update from you about what's happening at the library. Andy Hirsch is the Outreach and Senior Services Librarian at the Juno Public Library. Thanks so much for joining us, Andy. It was really great talking to you.
Thanks for having us.
Okay.
Yes, it was lovely to talk with you again.
Okay, thanks. Well, tomorrow on June Afternoon, we're going to feature another program produced by the Black Awareness Association of Juno. Tomorrow's conversation, hosted by Christina Michelle, looks at growing up black in Juno. And that'll do it for Juno Afternoon for today, broadcast live on KTOO 104.3 FM, online at ktoo.org, and repeated at 4 on KRNN at 102.7.